sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. What Taylor Swift song, this could have been our poll question, what Taylor Swift song is getting Comey through this indictment news? Shake It Off? I don't know. I don't know if that really captures the gravity of this. Wonder if she has any lyrics.
At my second Taylor Swift concert in Hartford, Connecticut, 14 years ago this summer, she sang a song about this topic, asking, why you gotta be so mean?
Please, God, don't let him quote lyrics.
And she spoke directly to the nasty people.
Oh, Christ.
I bet you got pushed around. Some living made you cold. But the cycle ends right now, because you can't leave me down that road. You'll be glad I didn't sing that.
I forgot about that. Yeah, the 8647 Seashells. I hope it was worth it. Like, I know he was doing it to promote his book, and that's so he could go on all these shows and laugh about how, I didn't know what that meant, you know? I thought it just meant... impeach. I didn't realize people use that in a restaurant when they want to kill the order. Or, you know, we used to say, like, if I worked at this restaurant where lobsters, yeah, pretty fancy, lobsters were a big thing. And then eventually you run out of lobsters, you know? That's the funny thing about lobsters. And they used to say, 86 the lobsters! Don't sell any more lobsters to anybody. But I never thought of it as try to get people and convince people that the lobsters aren't what they want to do. No, it was kill the lobsters. Kill them. That's it. Kill that order. Don't put it out there anymore. And so that's what 8647 means. He didn't know that, apparently. He didn't understand it. And now he's sad. And now Trump is doing to him what he did to Trump for years and years and years. And I don't feel bad about it. And I understand that it's a weak case. I understand it might be a little flimsy. But the other part of it, too, because I was talking about Kimmel, and I swear, I know, I'm almost done, I promise. But one of my fears with Melania and Trump, and I don't blame her especially, I was watching her yesterday when they were greeting the king and the queen consort, and she's standing there. You know how they have to do that thing, Taylor, where it's like they all stand kind of separated, and they have to stand for a long period of time while the press takes pictures before they walk into the White House? And I was like, it must be so unnerving. Not for Trump, like he said, he's not a basket case. He's been shot at a million times at this point. Doesn't seem to affect him. He's built different. But Melania seems to me like she's a sensitive person. She's a thoughtful person. She is not someone who necessarily thrives being in the spotlight. It must be really freaky to be outdoors after something like that happened, to have all these people staring at you. And I think there's a lot of people who would be standing there having an anxiety attack, just like thinking to themselves, is someone, I would be scanning the place. I would be, my eyes would be darting around at all times. Like, is something going to happen right now? Is something going to happen? And so I think this is a lot on her, and I don't think it's easy for her. And I don't even know why did I go down that road? Because of Jimmy Kimmel. Oh, so when she came out and said, hey, I think they should fire Jimmy Kimmel, I understood, because I don't think she finds any of this funny, and I think that she's seen her life and her husband's life flash before her eyes. But I did, my initial fear was, oh no, they're going to make a martyr out of this guy. Oh no, he's going to get the hero treatment yet again. And that is how I felt when Mar-a-Lago was raided. And that is how a lot of people felt, which is, wow, they so badly don't want this guy to become president that they're making a martyr out of him, and they're going to make him undefeatable. And that's exactly what they did. A lot of people in August, and that day, I think it was in August, when they raided Mar-a-Lago years ago, a lot of people said at that moment, wow, they might have just won this guy the election, because the campaigning, the fundraising, the support, the momentum, everything shifted in his favor, because people felt like it was so unjust and it was so egregious what they were doing, and it was such a witch hunt, and it really changed the momentum for Donald Trump. And one of the takeaways was they made this guy into a martyr. They wanted to make him into a criminal. They wanted to make him into an idiot. They wanted to make him into a Russian agent. And instead, they made him a martyr. And so when you see this happen to Comey, you might think the same thing. Are you making a martyr out of the guy? Are you giving him the hero treatment? But the difference is, and this is very important, Donald Trump has a fan base. James Comey's kind of a weird guy. He is a weird guy. You just heard that Taylor Swift diatribe he went on. He's always trying to convince us he has the music taste of a 14-year-old girl. I don't get who he's trying to appeal to there, but whatever. But he's a weird guy because, if you remember, he is kind of like a Bill de Blasio in the sense of he brings together the red and the blue because everybody hates him. Like, he's one of these guys who's universally... We can all kind of bond over the fact there's not a lot I can bond with Democrats over at this point. We don't have a lot in common. I don't want to see people killed over politics. A lot of people on the left seem to want that. But one thing we've always bonded over is, like, we all hate James Comey. He sucks. Like, you hate him because of the Hillary Clinton. You think that he destroyed Hillary Clinton's chances by reopening this investigation 11 days before the election. We think that he destroyed Trump's first administration or first term with Russiagate. There is no love there. So even as much as they want to try and say they're offended on his behalf and this is a miscarriage of justice and this is a witch hunt, you have to, in order to flip it, Taylor, where you make a martyr out of someone, there has to be some sort of warm feeling towards the person to begin with.
I don't think he has a fan base.
I
would say any time that you put an indictment up against this guy, his fan base, however small it may be, grows, because it's seen as the DOJ under Trump is targeting him. And I don't think this is a good look. That's on another front, that he now it looks like he's being targeted because they're going after a seashell picture.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind it. I don't know why. I get what you're saying. It doesn't bother me. I just feel like this is such a long time coming for all these people. And if they don't have a good case, they don't have a good case, and that will bear itself out. But until then, the process is the punishment. Seems like a good punishment to me.
Yeah, if you can prosecute it, go ahead. I mean, that's by all means. It's just not a good look, and I don't think the greatest thing you can. It's embarrassing after the first indictments came down and he beat those, so now we're going after this.
Yeah, but you know what I'll also say, just to go back to the Martha Stewart, it's like, it's a snake thing to do, or it's like kind of a weak way to go about it, slippery way to go about it. And there's some sort of poetic justice in that, like, that's exactly how he's always operated. He's gotten so many people on these kind of weak, trumped up, politically motivated charges, and now it's happening to him. And I'm sure he'll beat it. I think he'll be fine. That's the other part of this, is that I hope he enjoys this moment in the sun. I hope he enjoys his seashell moment in the sun, because the way the news cycle works now is, like, I don't think we'll be talking about this tomorrow or even the next day. I think it's going to be a day news story, and then we're going to move on to something else. I mean, I hope for his sake, like you said, I hope maybe it will drum up some fans. He's been trying for years to appease the left, who hates him, including, like, his wife and daughters, who I think are big mad at him for not doing more to elect Hillary Clinton and to try to overthrow Donald Trump. He's been trying his hardest. That's like the Taylor Swift element. That's all the seashells. He's been trying to endear himself to these people on the left. Maybe this will do it. Maybe Trump just gave him...
A tender-hearted woman saw a poor, half-frozen snake.
Now, I do have to mention, and then I'm really done with the Kimmel stuff, is that I keep hearing how these are jokes, and you're allowed to make jokes. And Jimmy Kimmel came out, and he doubled down on this, and he's allowed to say jokes about Melania. And that's fine. Like, free speech, baby. I'm glad you're all so pro-free speech now. I'm glad you've all found the First Amendment. This is beautiful. And then this clip, and Jake Tapper came to his defense. He's a comedian. All these liberal talking heads, Gayle King, Jake Tapper, they all hang out in the Hamptons. They're all coming to his defense like, Jimmy would never. Jimmy would never. And the reason they feel so confident in saying that is because they're friends with him. They go to barbecues with him. So they're like, no. Jimmy would never do that, okay? He's a really good guy. Well, this is Jimmy Kimmel, now the guy who's claiming free speech is absolute, jokes are jokes, comedians are comedians. This was him after the joke started to be made about Paul Pelosi's attack. This is cut 12.
And it's not just the smears that they put out about Paul Pelosi, these deranged conspiracy theories. A lot of these folks, right-wing MAGA folks, tried to make jokes at Paul Pelosi's expense. Where's the line? I mean, I personally found those jokes by Don Jr. and others just horrible and not even remotely funny.
I've said a million stupid things, and I would hope that people would decide whether an apology is sincere. When an apology isn't even offered, that's, I mean, listen, these people are supposed to be Christians. I am a Catholic. I grew up in the church. What I was taught was that if you do something wrong, you ask for forgiveness and you are forgiven for these things. The idea that that it would be anything other than that, that these people who are allegedly following the teachings of Jesus would behave in this way. It doesn't make any sense at all. And I don't, I just can't understand how that works for so many people, so many Americans.
Jimmy is pretty sweet on you.
Yeah, it's inconceivable, Jimmy. And I love when they throw out the Christian stuff. Like, I'm a Catholic. I'm sure he's a devout Catholic like Joe Biden. Okay, we can get into how devout of a Catholic he is soon. Because I know they like to do this with us, right? They like to dissect your spirituality or your faith or, you know, your morality. And if you're a Catholic, then your opinions are grotesque to them when it comes to things like the sanctity of life, when it comes to anything like that. But when they want to use it as a weapon against you, or they want to beat you over the head with how bad of a person you are for laughing at a joke they don't think is funny, suddenly they all become the arbiters of who's Christian and who's Catholic and, you know, who's doing right by Jesus Christ. It's so rich. It's so rich. You cannot blame me for playing this today. That cut of him, like, oh, and when I'm sorry about something, you judge it based off how sincere you think his sorry was when you said, oh yeah, Melania, why don't you talk to your husband about it? Was that a sincere? I've never heard this guy give a sincere apology in my life. And he can be sincere because I don't know if his tears are always sincere, but he cries a lot. I've never seen him cry over anything awful he said about Trump. And you know what, Taylor, why I feel particularly strong about this is because with the Paul Pelosi stuff, I never joked about it. I really didn't. Like, I don't, it's something I, when people start getting hurt, when people start dealing with these attacks, I don't think it's funny. I really don't. Like, I don't have a dark sense of humor, I guess, either, though, and I acknowledge that. But I am able to think to myself, well, how would I feel if this happened to a conservative? And in fact, because it's happened to Rand Paul, because it's happened to Steve Scalise, when it happened to Paul Pelosi, I didn't even have to imagine, like, how would I? I knew how I felt when it happened to conservatives. So I said, this is terrible. I hope he's okay. He's an older man. Like, this shouldn't happen. I hope he's okay. The fact that they are only able to see it when it's happening to their side, and they have no concept, they have no capabilities when it comes to trying to understand or trying to have sympathy or empathy for anyone if it doesn't fit their exact political narrative, and if it's not perfectly convenient for them, then they drop everything else. They are the biggest hypocrites on the face of the planet. And I love, 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 love talking about it. Speaking of hypocrites, I want you all to check out my latest column, okay? Because it's about a hypocrite, Rosa DeLauro. We talked a lot about her interaction with Lee Zeldin on Monday. I was inspired by it. I told Taylor, I don't write nearly as much as I used to. I'm sure you guys have noticed that.
Yo, this is the Ranking Rizzler.
But when it's the Ranking Rizzler, when it's the raw
don't
milk hater.
Raw milk, it is dangerous to your health.
And I was trying to think why I like the interaction so much between her and Lee Zeldin. And I wrote about it at the Boston Herald. So go to bostonherald.com. I put it up on my Twitter. Please, please, please check it out. I want it to trend at the Boston Herald. But I was trying to think why I like the interaction so much. And I think it's because it reminded me of one of my favorite interactions between Howie Carr and Marty Walsh, Taylor. And I've talked about this before, where Marty Walsh came into studio, and I give him credit. He was a good sport. He came in, I always, if someone comes in and can take it, you're getting two thumbs up from me. And he did a great job. He went to dinner with us afterwards. He was great. But they were having an argument back and forth about something, and Howie asked him about something, and he didn't know the answer. He didn't know what Howie was talking about. And Howie looked at him, and he was saying this. He wasn't trying to be mean, but he said, Marty, you got to read more. And I was like, oof. I remember being in the green room and hearing that and going, ugh, that's got to hurt. That has to hurt when someone says, you got to read more. Like, I would be hurt by that if someone said it to me. If I had Hans von Spakovsky on and I asked him a question, and he goes, Grace, you got to read more. I'd be like, damn. He's not wrong, but it hurt. And when Lee Zeldin told Rosa DeLauro, you should do your constituents a favor and read these statutes and understand what you're talking about and understand the Supreme Court decisions that limit the EPA's authority when it comes to climate change, if you're going to yell at me about it, you should read this stuff. It was just so beautiful. There was so much there that I loved. So I wrote about it. Check it out at the Boston Herald, bostonherald.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about Boston because Mayor Wu's unveiled this big climate plan. We discussed it yesterday. Electric stoves, electric buildings, electric vehicles, electric charging stations, congestion pricing, all this stuff. And Governor Mark Healey doesn't seem as gung-ho on it, but Mayor Wu is taking a page out of New York City's book, and that has me very nervous. She's looking at Mamdani. She's looking at the Big Apple and saying, I want to be more like you guys. We'll talk about that when we come back.
More of the Grace Curley Show up next. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Oh, 339 says, really? You're feeling like the Comey indictment is pushing the limit after all they've done to prosecute Trump and Trump people? Really? No go, Grace. I'm not feeling that. I've already said that I understand why it's probably not going to hold up. I understand why it's going to be really hard to prove the merits of this case when you're dealing with something. You have to prove that not only did he know what 8647 meant, which I do think he understood exactly what it meant, but you have to prove that he was posting it in a way that he wanted to incite violence, that he wanted to see something. It's a lot to prove here when you're talking about seashells on the beach. That's my only point. I'm not sitting here, hey, I've done that before where I sit and I give you all the, hey, the reason I don't like this is because I don't like where it's going to go. I'm not doing that this time. Taylor's doing that. Taylor's being the voice of reason today. Taylor's being the one that's, you know, walking the fine line of, no, this isn't a good look for the Trump administration. Today, I'm being the one who's saying, rah, rah, what's good for the goose? What's good for the goose? The goose is on the loose. I don't want this grief today.
I also think it's just, it flies in the face of free speech. I'm a free speech absolutist. You can say what you want, as long as it's not in a, you know, you're not making a direct threat towards somebody. I don't think that constitutes.
Does the First Amendment say anything about seashells? Did the Founding Fathers write anything down about seashells?
It's a fair point, and I can't wait for the Supreme Court to talk seashells. But 603 has a great point that
the framers, how did they not see this coming? Go ahead.
603 has a good point in saying, is it possible that this is like a gateway case? And there is that possibility. Maybe this is just a ruse to get his phone and, you know, be able to go through all the records on his phone, determine if there's anything else there that they can uncover.
I do feel like we're doing the four-dimensional chess thing. It's not what it seems.
Well, I mean, if there's trends in the past, there's trends in the future. So
yeah, and I do wonder, though, because I do think you lead with your strongest stuff. That's typically how it goes, even with, you know, even in court cases and things like that. But hey, I like that. I'm the optimist here, and I think that's a great prediction. I hope it's true. We'll be right back. I want to talk Mayor Wu. We'll talk more James Comey. There's so much to get to today. Stay with us.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Dude, we got so many people who want to talk Comey. So I was just thinking about this. And you know how when you're trying to prove defamation, and they always say it's like a really high bar, especially if you're a public figure, if you're someone like Donald Trump. And if I don't use all the appropriate jargon, forgive me. But it's something along the lines of, and I'm just going to use an example here. You have to prove that the person was lying about you and they knew they were lying about you and that it cost you monetarily or hurt your reputation or it affected the way you make money or something like that. So the example would be like if I started saying Taylor in his spare time, hey guys, Taylor doesn't do Frank Sinatra gigs in his spare time. He actually dresses up like a clown and he does clown gigs. And then Taylor says, I'm going to sue you because that's not true. And then they find a text where I'm texting Jared or Matt and saying, I'm going to go on the air and say, Taylor, I'm going to lie. And I'm going to say that Taylor does gigs as a clown. And then they have me, right? Because on one hand, I'm saying, hey, I didn't know at the time. But they can prove that when I lied, I knew I was lying. And so part of me goes, that's why it's really hard, because most people aren't dumb enough to write this stuff down. But now I'm starting to think about it. And I'm like, could that be what this is? Because what Comey did, I would liken it to the Andrew Cuomos of the world, who they're so smug, they're so arrogant, they've gotten away with so much, they've screwed so many people over in their time, they never assume they're going to be the ones to get screwed over, so they get a little sloppy. Could maybe going on all these late night shows like he did, where he's holding up the Instagram and laughing about it and saying, I had no idea what it meant. I was just, you know, I was just walking in my sweater. And I maybe behind the scenes, and I don't know what they have access to. Again, this is just my speculation. But could it be that Comey knew full well what he was putting out there? And he also at one point told someone he knew full well what he was putting out there. Is it still a hard case to prove? Yes. But I'm just offering a different scenario where it's like there's a world in which he's bragging to people in between Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel takes. Yeah, I really stuck it to him. And I know 86 means kill the guy and I don't care. I wouldn't, that could be a possibility, Taylor. Do I sound like I'm grasping at straws? Because I don't mean to.
No, I think that's in all likelihood exactly what happened.
It's dangerous talking about things.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the reason that they're prosecuting him over this. If they know of communications between him and somebody else where he said he fully knew what he was doing. But even so, you still have to prove that he knew what 86 meant. And if it constitutes a direct threat on the life of the president of the United States, or if he was speaking in generalities,
but maybe
or a political sense,
maybe he fessed up to it to someone and said, "I know."
I don't want to give Comey too much credit, but I imagine that the one-time director of the FBI, is not that stupid. He was stupid enough to post the picture, so the bar is not very high.
Right, and that's the great thing about 2026, Taylor, is like every time I say that, I saw someone make an Instagram about this the other day. Every time I see a situation, I go, well, no one's that stupid. I'm proven wrong. Like, people's stupidity is undefeated. So I don't know, but I'm just putting that out there. It is kind of a situation where you end up going like, well, maybe he knew that they know that he knows what they know. And he told someone he knew, but then he said he didn't know. I don't know. All I know is that whether it's Brennan or whether it's Comey or whether it's Andrew Cuomo after COVID, none of these people listen to their lawyers. They all think they're above the law. That's the funny thing. You know, that's their big thing about Trump. No one's above the law. But I have to imagine that if any of these guys had lawyers, which they do, that their lawyers, if they were worth anything, would say to them, hey, you just posted 8647. Don't go on the late night shows talking about it. Like, you know, there's a chance. Because, Taylor, think about it like this. You post that, right, about Joe Biden. You would never do that. But let's say you did. Your lawyer is just a regular guy. And I know you're a celebrity of sorts, but quasi. I'm going to put you on the B-minus C-plus list, celeb. Your lawyer would say, hey, there's a chance there's some repercussions here. Don't talk to anyone about this. Don't go on the air and talk about it with Grace. Don't make jokes about it. Let's just, you know, we're going to be dealing with some legal stuff here. That's just good legal advice. So the fact that these guys go out and they write books or they do podcasts or they do interviews, I do think you're opening yourself up to a scenario in which the DOJ can prove you were lying And that is something Comey's done to other people. Martha Stewart. Like, that kind of trick of the trade where it's like, hey, you said this thing to one person, and then you said this thing to another. I think that's how they get them, because they're so arrogant that they're like, hey, I'm going to not only am I going to post this seashell thing, but I'm going to go on with Kimmel and Colbert. And I'm going to laugh about it, and I'm going to make jokes, and I'm going to promote my book with it. And that's where I think you get into a lot of trouble, is when you start talking so much about something that was already a bad idea to do, and then you can't help yourself, and you don't listen to your lawyer. Because remember with Cuomo, they kept saying he was getting in more and more trouble, Ciabella, you know, all this trouble, COVID, the nursing home, all this stuff. And he would get out there and start fighting with reporters. And I kept saying, does he have a lawyer who's telling him, like, please, please, every day you do this, you're making it worse for us. Every day you are making this impossible for us to try to defend you. I think all of these guys just don't take the advice of their legal counsel. I think they just say, I don't need to. I'm fine. I'm gonna make money off this. I'm gonna be a star. Like, please, I've done this before.
Legoland.
The arrogance is what gets you. Matt, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Matt.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Matt?
Hello. Hi, you. Grace. How are you?
Good.
I just want to mention about the 86 thing on the seashells. I think I read it in the Post today that it has its origins going to restaurants. My understanding was always that back in the mafia days in Las Vegas, when they wanted to whack somebody, they said 86 of them. Take them 8 miles out to the middle of the desert, 6 feet deep. That was always my understanding of it.
You know what's funny you say that is my uncle, shout out Uncle John, texted me and said, where did Taylor grow up? If someone was going to be 86, you don't stand near him. Comey was the FBI. He heard a ton of tapes where bad guys plan to 86 someone. So kind of going to what you're saying, Matt. I did hear it a lot in restaurants, but restaurants probably picked it up from that. It was probably a little slang or something, or a little lingo that they picked up from somewhere else. So I don't really know the origins. I'm sure there's going to be think pieces that will break it down. But when I worked at a restaurant, we did use that. They had a whiteboard where they would say 86, and then they put all the specials or whatever, whenever they ran out of the specials and they didn't want you promoting them anymore, they'd write it down so you would know. Richard, you're up next. What's going on, Richard?
Hi, Grace. I agree with you 1,000%, and I feel very strongly about it. He's used Trump as a punching bag for 11 years. And if Trump fights back or punches back, oh well, he deserves it. This guy was out for Trump right from the beginning, before he ran for president. He went after and entrapped the general who was
General Flynn.
Trump's General Flynn. And then he stood up and said that Hillary Clinton. It didn't rise to a felony. You know, wasn't felony. And he's lied repeatedly about Trump. And if Trump, I don't know whether he's on good legal constitutional ground or not. I really don't care.
I know. That's
Trump's doing it for me, too. He's punching back.
Yeah. You know what, Richard? You and I are in the same zone today, and I'm sure there's people screaming into their radios, well, it doesn't make sense. You shouldn't say that. But it is the Tommy Lee Jones, one of my favorite lines of all time. I don't care. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes I turn into a honey badger too, where I just don't give a bleep anymore. And I'm at that point. It's only Wednesday, but they got me there. They're trying to make me feel bad for Jimmy Kimmel, and they're trying to make me feel bad for James Comey, and there's all these victims. And meanwhile, my president's getting shot at, and nobody seems to care. Nobody's worried about the guy who's dodging bullets left and right. But I'm supposed to care that Seashell Man is going to have to deal with some legal ramifications for being a jerk. You're not going to catch me caring about it. Not today. Not today. Thank you for the call, Richard. I want to talk really quickly here. We're running out of time. But I mentioned yesterday all these climate plans by Mayor Wu. Congestion pricing is being studied. You know how that's going to go. And they asked Governor Healey about it. And she said, we certainly need to reduce congestion and reduce traffic on our roads. We need to protect our communities from climate change, the blah, 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 blah. It's also in a moment where people are already struggling with costs and affordability, so we can't be creating more problems for people that way. But as I understand it, it's a study, so we'll see what comes of it. It's going to end up, the study is going to end up costing us a lot of money, because eventually not only will the task force cost money, but they'll implement whatever this. I
hope the study says the bike lanes suck. That's what I hope the study says.
No, the study here, I'm going to tell you what the study says, okay? This is Karnak the Magnificent, Grace Curley. Curley the Magnificent. The study's going to say, charge people congestion prices. Charge people more for parking. Charge people, charge people, charge people. Make it more expensive for people to drive in the city, and make more bike lanes. Bike lanes good, make more of them. That's what it's going to say. And I could save them whatever they're going to spend on this study and then eventually implement the prices. Just give me the money, because I'm telling you exactly what the study's going to come out with. But
I'll undercut you. I'll take half.
Yeah. This is a good, we have a good consulting team here, okay? And the part of it I find funny is they both, the only place that Wu and Healy will go is WGBH, okay, Boston Public Radio, and they talk about all this stuff, and they are just, they get their asses kissed on GBH. And so Wu's on there talking about this, and she mentions, I've always believed that every tool should be on the table, and this is an important one, talking about congestion pricing, and that it's going to be a win-win for Boston. A win-win, as Larry David once said in Curb. It's a win-win. You win. I win. Win-win. I don't really see how we're winning here. I'm not going to consider myself a winner if it's going to cost me even more money to go into the city of Boston. Usually when I'm going in there, I don't want to be going in there anyway. So I would say it's a win-lose, or it's a winner-loser. The winner here is city officials who just keep raking us over the coals and there's no consequences for it. The loser is yours truly, or the loser is anyone who has to go into Boston. But then she said, we're seeing it work in New York. And I was like, oh gosh, what does that say? That we're looking at New York as our example, as like this shining light that we should be following. That's our North Star, is New York, where everyone is leaving. The billionaires can't get out of there fast enough. Zohran Mamdani, do you want to check in on how it's going with the socialist mayor? Can I hear from Zohran? Because this guy had big plans. He was a man with a plan. And this is what he was saying during his press conference yesterday. This is Cut 13.
New York City faces a budget crisis of a historic magnitude. We inherited a deficit larger than any since the Great Recession. Years of mismanagement and chronic underbudgeting, alongside a structural imbalance between what New York City sends to the state and what we receive in return, have taken a toll. We cannot close this deficit with savings alone. We need new revenue, and we need a structural reset in our relationship with the state. That is the only way to meet our legal obligation to pass a balanced budget, and to do so without imposing a financial burden onto the backs of working people. I'm glad to partner with Speaker Menin as we call upon Albany and deliver a balanced budget. Together, we are extending
the executive budget
deadline.
Do I have this right? The collective, the warmth of collectivism and socialism and all these great things he was going to do, the city-run grocery stores, the free buses. What I'm gathering from this is they don't have any money, and that maybe his plan of threatening these billionaires with pied-à-terre taxes and creepy videos outside Ken Griffin's penthouse, it's maybe scaring away the people that are paying for everything and that are giving them all of these taxes that they burn through and then vilify the very people who are providing the money that they need. And now they don't have any money. And so he keeps doubling down. I get that, like, everyone has different philosophies. But to me, this is the least surprising thing ever. You make videos vilifying Ken Griffin and talking about how you're going to put a tax on him because even though he already pays a ton of taxes in New York City, he doesn't live there full time. So because he's not draining your resources like he could be, you're going to punish him for that. Instead of just taking the money he's already giving you and being happy, you're going to punish him further. You're going to drive him out of your state along with other billionaires. And then they're going to take their businesses with them. They're going to take their jobs with them. The economy in New York's going to suffer. And then you're turning around to me and being like, I don't know how this happened. You're pulling the Bernie Sanders. I come to you again asking for your financial support. You did this. This is like by design. This is exactly what you planned. I'm just, I guess the part of it that makes me laugh is like how quickly it all came to fruition. I knew this guy's plans weren't going to work. I knew that punishing the 1% of people that are picking up the bar tab is just going to make them leave the bar and find a new establishment. Miami, Delray, you know, Austin, all these places. I knew that. I just didn't know it was going to happen within the first like 120 days of him taking over. I thought that there'd be like a little grace period of pretending the socialism was working. Not so much.
So he's meeting with King Charles at the moment. Did you hear what he would say to King Charles if he got the chance to meet with him?
No.
You haven't thought about anything you might say if you say hello to him and he stops to chat?
You know, if I was to speak to the king separately from that, I would probably encourage him to return the Kohinoor diamond.
The Kohinoor diamond is in the queen's crown, and it was taken from India in 1865 or something like that.
You know what, Taylor, you know what my response to him is? You're so brave. You are so, so brave. You are, what would we do? Like, if it wasn't for virtue signaling, what would this man have? It would be him and his wife and her fancy leather boots and her anti-Semitic social media posts and his big-ass smile, and that's all they would have. If it wasn't for virtue signaling, he would have nothing to offer people. But you know what? You showed him. There's nothing worse than when someone says, like, what would you say to someone? And it's a complete hypothetical, and you can just pretend that you would say, like, you, by the way, I don't believe he would do that. You know why? Because this guy's talked such a big game, and when he was with Donald Trump, this guy who's a fascist, who he hates so much, you know what he did? That's what he said to Donald Trump. Couldn't even call him a fascist. And I'm supposed to believe you meet with the king, you're all of a sudden going to be, I have a bone to pick with you. Come on, fake tough guy. I don't think so. If you couldn't do it with Trump, you know, your fellow New Yorker, you're telling me you're going to do it with the king of England? Doubtful. By the way, the Supreme Court, the AP's, this is the AP's version of the Supreme Court news. Supreme Court weakens a landmark civil rights era law and aids GOP efforts to control the House. Don't you love this impartial coverage? This is why I'm so happy today. It's like, oh, things must be going good if this is the spin from AP. Oh, they're aiding us. Yeah, because that's what the Supreme Court's been doing, is aiding the GOP. Come on. We'll be right back. We got a lot more. Stay with us.
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The other part, Taylor, which maybe we can get into this tomorrow because we got about 15 seconds. But the other part about the congestion pricing and making people pay more for parking and studying all this stuff that's going to make it more expensive to take your car to work if you work in Boston is that all of these people, whether it's Durkin or Wu, they all use their campaign money to get Ubers everywhere they go. WBUR said when the MBTA Green Line was down, Sharon Durkin relied on Ubers on 19 occasions. Can you afford that? Probably not.